So what I've been doing at the beginning of each session is going back to zero, or at least going back to one, Krishna. But if I ask the same set of questions again, I don't think I need to go back to who is Krishna. So I'll just do a little summary of what we've done so far. Particularly so that we're ready for today's presentation. And that's the slide where we ended yesterday. We had this nice story of King Chitraketu and Giant Vijay and all of that, remember? And that was part of the chapter where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses removal of undesirable things from the heart, contaminations of the heart. It's one of the stages in the unfolding of the creeper of bhakti. If you can recall, there were four different categories of anarthas or impurities of heart. And they were categorized according to the source of emanation of those impurities of heart. And we focused on number three. One of the impurities of heart arises from past sins. The effect of those unwanted things are coverings of the heart. Remember that list? Asmita, avidya, that nice list? Forgetfulness of one's real identity, acceptance of a false identity. Attachment to sense objects, aversion to things of this world that bring unhappiness. And abhinivesh was a pervasive attitude of enjoying matter. Those are the results of past sin. But the chanting of the holy name and the process of devotional service removes that impurity of heart. The second category of anarthas was those that arise from past pious activity. Because when we do pious activity, there's fruits of that piety. We prosper. And then we try to enjoy the material prosperity. And that's an obstacle on the path of devotion. It makes an impurity in the heart. But chanting and the bhakti process removes that impurity. So the third category was impurities that result from offenses. So we spent most of our time on this one. If you remember that chart that we had? Where did the chart go? The whole thing just went. Where did the chart go? No. Well, anyway, yeah, maybe it is at the end. Yeah, there's the chart. So, in this category of offenses that arise from chanting of the holy name, this one is most problematic. What it says down here is shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. And only at that stage is the impurities of heart removed completely, absolutely. So then there are anartas that arise from bhakti itself. And we discussed that in terms of trying to be the enjoyer of the nice praise and the position and the honor that comes from doing your devotional service nicely. So this was our area of concentration. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur then described categories of this namaparad. Offending the sadhus or devotees of the Lord. And I'm just not going to go through all the slides. So we have to be very careful. In short, this was another considering the demigods to be equal to Krishna. And we also considered offending or disrespecting the Vedas or literature in pursuance of the Vedas, the Smritis. So this is where we ended up. Jamila and Chitraketu. So these were additional points that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur made details about this process of removal of impurities of the heart. Let's review. And I said we would finish the chapter today. We will finish. And then the next chapter is quite short. There are just three slides remaining, or three or four slides remaining with this. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur asks a question. Along with the holy name comes so much of Krishna's mercy. Are we to understand that one who is chanting the type of nam aparad or chanting offensively, that the sound may be there but the mercy of Krishna is not there? You understand the question? The sound is there, but the mercy of Krishna is not there. If one is offender against the holy name, a And the answer he gives is yes. And he gives an example to explain it. Supposing there's a very nice and qualified and wealthy master, and he has someone who is assisting him, and the person who is assisting him makes some blatant gross offense. So the master may then just neglect that person. But if the servant or the assistant is faithful, knowing that he's done some offense, some wrong thing, in a very humble mood, he continues serving the master. Even it may appear the master is just ignoring him and neglecting him. Gradually, the detachment of the master changes again to accepting that assistant or servant. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is using this example to explain that when we make offenses against the holy name, and we enter into the clearing stage trying to become free from those offenses, for some time we may have to suffer or experience the reaction to those offenses. But continue faithfully chanting nonetheless. And gradually the effects of those impurities of heart are eradicated. Then he asks another question. It's similar, but it's more extreme. Is it possible for one who commits namaparad, to become so afflicted that they turn against Krishna? They turn against Guru. And they turn against devotional service. Can nam aparad be that severe? Can the results of offending the holy name be that severe? And the answer is yes. To illustrate, he gives another example. These are both very good examples to remember when you're having difficulty. Of course, the devotees here probably don't have very many difficulties. But just in case it happens, or for one of your friends it happens, you can help them understand that situation. Supposing someone contracts a disease that has a fever accompanying the disease, anyone who has had fever knows that one of the natural parts of fever is you lose your appetite completely. You're not hungry at all. And the persons who are tending to you, they want to give you something. And you say, no, I'm not at all hungry. Then just take some soup.
然后呢,
no, I'm not hungry.
不饿.
Maybe just some liquid broth. No, not hungry.
不饿.
The very thing that can bring back strength, you don't want.
所以呢,
it's due to the feverish condition. So what is that person to do? Vishwanath says they're to go to a proper doctor. From the doctor they get a diagnosis and proper medicine. And faithfully take that medicine. Slowly, very slowly, a little appetite returns. Not much. Just a little. And so they sip something liquid. In this way, gradually, very gradually, hunger is restored. One's capacity to eat and digest is regained. And then eventually they can regain their strength as the fever is also gone. It's a very nice example. The fever is like material existence. And the lack of appetite is not being attracted to the holy name and the process of devotional service. And even distancing oneself from the very people that can help you in devotional service. These are the results of nama aparada. So what to do? Even there isn't a taste, continue to chant. And that's explained at the bottom. Just continue to chant anyway. Even you don't have a taste, chant anyway, because it's for purification. And then gradually taste can return. And he makes the point, taste really means mercy. Look at the heading up at the top. By nama parad, we lose the mercy of Krishna. The sound is there, but the mercy is absent. How can we get the mercy once again? Having faith in the instructions of our acharyas, faithfully continue to chant, and the mercy of the holy name will again be manifest. And that's what taste is. It's something descending. Receiving descending mercy is what taste is. And in mature stage, that's what love is. We have a relationship with Krishna, an eternal relationship with Krishna. But we've broken that relationship. Krishna didn't do that. We did that. And not only did it once, for its countless lifetimes we've been doing that. And now in this one lifetime, we want everything to be nice again, like nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
we have to take responsibility for our misuse of free will for countless periods of time. And part of that is our paying attention in the process of chanting. And this restoration of mercy comes gradually. To support this understanding, Vishwanath then quotes from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Not Brahma-samhita, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. You'll find this verse quoted in Bhagavad Gita purport 4.10. And these are the very stages that we're discussing now. And here's the translation in Chinese. So this is a gradual process, step by step. Going back to our example of a little plant, the creeper that's sprouting with two leaves. As that sprout continues to grow, Lord Chaitanya taught that it goes beyond the entire universe, pierces the coverings of the universe into the spiritual sky. Remember yesterday, the other day we spoke about this vast spiritual sky. But it doesn't stop there. It keeps growing and growing. And it enters into the planet of Krishna. And the creeper reposes at the feet of Krishna. And flowers are supplied to Krishna in service. That's the bhava stage. And the prema stage is the ripened fruit. After the flower comes a ripened fruit. And that ripened fruit is love of God. So he then adds some other very nice points. He says, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, some people ask, why doesn't offenseless chanting of the holy name immediately eradicate all anarthas? To answer this question, he gives the example of a fruit tree. Fruit trees bear fruit only in a particular season. Similarly, Nama Prabhu reveals his mercy upon the offenseless chanter in due course of time.
同样的, 圣灵他母在适当的时候,
this is a nice understanding. Here's a phrase that I use regularly in guiding devotees. Listen carefully. I'll say it twice. When you surrender unto Krishna, please understand that you're surrendering on His terms, not your terms. What does that mean? Generally, when we surrender to Krishna, we have some expectation. My dear Lord Krishna, I wish to surrender unto you. And here's what I'm expecting from you to do for me. It should be like this, and it should be like that, and I've got my whole set of expectations. But that's not what devotional service is. That's business. We sign a contract with Krishna. I fulfill my part of the contract, and you fulfill your part of the contract, and we have a business deal. Krishna never signed a contract like that. But in our mind, we have a contract like that. So now I'll say it again. When you surrender unto Krishna, please understand that surrender unto Krishna is on His terms, not your terms. I learned this lesson in Krishna consciousness in the first month of devotional service living in a temple. It was painful. But it stayed with me for the whole of my devotional service up until today. I'll tell you this story. I was in college, and I went to visit Boston to see about enrolling in graduate school in Boston. You got it? Okay. When I was in Boston, I visited the Hare Krishna Temple in Boston. There's many details, but it was a very ecstatic experience. Then I went back to my undergraduate school. Many things happened in my heart between myself and Krishna. And I reached a point where I really wanted to receive what Prabhupada came to give, the full experience of just full surrender to Krishna in a temple. So I was feeling really inspired. Received the fullness of the mercy of our wonderful founder Acharya. So I got in my car. I drove about 18 hours to get to Boston from where my school was. I got there on Sunday night, just as the Sunday feast program was closing. They didn't even know who I was. I was just this new guy. And they said, oh, come on in. We have lots of pots to wash after the Sunday feast. They didn't ask me, do I want to take prashadam? They just showed me the pot room to wash pots. So I thought, okay, I'll wash pots, I guess. The next morning, someone came and spoke to me. They said, you did such a nice job washing the pots. We'd like to give you this as your service, to wash Krishna's pots. And I was thinking, like a college student is very proud, thinking something, some sarcastic thoughts. Don't they know who I am? I'm a college student. I can do much more than wash pots. But that's what they wanted me to do, so I washed pots. The pot room was right at the bottom of the Brahmachari Ashram stairs. And all the Brahmacharis every day very enthusiastically after the morning program would go out on Harinam Sankirtan, distribute Prabhupada's books, and I'm standing there washing pots. Krishna. And then one devotee said, you know what Prabhupada said? When you wash the pots, you're cleansing your heart. So my college sarcasm said, oh yeah, well if it's so nice, why don't you come and help me? If it's washing your heart, then why don't you right by my side washing your heart too? I didn't say it, I just thought it. You can imagine the condition of my mind. But I kept washing the pots. About 2 weeks later, somebody said, oh, you're doing such a nice job. Here's another one that Prabhupada said. He said, you should clean the pots so nicely, you can see your reflection in the pot. By this time, I had become a little softer in my heart. By this time, after 2 weeks, I was a little less fighting and, you know, arguing in my mind. I was just accepting this is what Krishna wants. So I said to myself, as long as I'm going to wash pots, let me do it the way the Prabhupada said to wash pots. And this was in the very early years of our Hare Krishna movement. We didn't have money. So these were used pots. The bottom was black.
Okay. 这是, 啊, 六锅, 就是旧锅, 那么这, 那个锅呢, 底下,
And they were even broken, like, you know, bent, because they had been dropped in different times. But I surrendered to what Prabhupada said. I found out later he meant the part where the food goes, not the part where the flame goes. Should be so shiny you can see yourself. It took me 2 weeks to get the burnt part of the bottom of the pot so shiny you could see your reflection in the bottom part of the pot. I was determined, I was really into doing what Prabhupada said, because that's how it's going to clean my heart. So at the end of those 2 weeks, all the pots, you could see yourself. And somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, guess what, we have a new guy who can do the pot washing, come on out with us on Sankirtan. And I went, Krishna! What Krishna wanted was my heart. He could easily have made an arrangement, just go on Sankirtan with a dirty heart.
But
he wanted me to surrender. Go on Sankirtan with a surrendered heart. So I learned that lesson for the third time. When you surrender unto Krishna, please understand you're surrendering on His terms, not your terms. So our chanting should be done like that also. And all of our devotional service should be done like that also. Now we'll go to the next point below. In the past, behind us, before our lives today, there are many impure activities that we all have been engaged in. And those past bad activities, they can't stand in the way or as serve as obstacles in the path of devotional service. If you are surrendered to Krishna. In fact, they're compared to the mouth of a serpent that has the fangs broken. They're harmless. And he ends the chapter this way. Do you remember our discussion of prarabdha karma? Say it, prarabdha karma. Who can remember the meaning of prarabdha karma? It was 2 days ago, so I know it's difficult to remember. Prarabdha karma.
Prarabdha karma.
It's karma that we're suffering right now. Karma that's just about to fructify, but it's not quite there yet, is called aprarabdha karma. Karma that's just about to fructify. But it's not there yet. It's called aprarabdha karma. And then there's two others. Lying as seed. Our heart is filled with karma seeds. It's called bija. Bija means seed. And then when it just starts to open or sprout, it's called kuta. So prarabdha karma. So devotees sometimes have some disease or some problem. And in devotee circles, we sometimes hear, oh, I'm just getting the fruit of my past karma. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says no. And he quotes a verse from the 10th canto, chapter 88. Where Krishna says, if I especially favor someone, I gradually take away all his wealth, being penniless. His family and relatives reject him, and thus he suffers one distress after another. Prabhupada referred to this verse in relation to himself. He was, by his astrological chart, he was due to become one of the most wealthy people in the world. But Krishna showed him special mercy. Prabhupada described like this. Krishna took it all away. And then Prabhupada was practically penniless. But Krishna is very kind. Just like Maharaj was describing in his class, Krishna gave himself instead of all that wealth. And wherever Krishna is, the goddess of fortune is there. So Prabhupada had more wealth than he could dream of having previously. And previously had a few children, now he had thousands of children. And they were serving him with love like his children would never have served him. Krishna is very kind. So, if you have some illness, some difficulty, some tribulation, remember this verse. And exactly what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying. This is not due to prarabdha karma. Past activity that's now fructifying in some difficult situation. It's not our past activity, bad activity, fructifying today in some bad reaction. And I'm quoting here from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Sometimes it appears that a devotee will suffer more than a non-devotee. This is part of the plan of the Supreme Lord to increase the devotee's humility, and his longing and surrender to the Lord. When confronted with sufferings and reversals, an offensive person may lose their taste for devotional service and go away. So we need to contemplate the mercy feature of Krishna that comes our way. The mercy feature of Krishna that's coming to us. Just like standing there washing pots for 1 month. For some people that's very nice. For me, I was being trained in a school of being proud of my education and my accomplishments and this and that, and I had to give all that up and just become humble. And each of us have our attachments. It's part of being a human being. Sometimes those things that we're attached to are taken from us. Krishna's mercy. Not our past karma. Krishna's mercy. And we should take fuller shelter of our devotional practice. Sometimes people say that it's not really fair because I really haven't made any offenses, and so I should be experiencing nectar and devotional service, and it's not happening. Something's wrong. So Vishwanath says that's not the case. It's due to offenses, and one should honestly accept one's condition and become free from offenses. That's our situation in general amongst all the devotees assembled here. Okay, now we're ready for the next chapter, chapter 4. What comes after anartha-nivritti, the stage of eradication of unwanted things of the heart? Who knows the answer? Kobe Priya? Nishtha.
Okay.
So that's our topic, Nishtha. And to explain Nishtha, he begins the chapter by referring to Srimad Bhagavatam. And Surabhi is going to read the translation for these two verses.
欢享乐的欲望，这些奉献者都品尝到他的讯息，恰当的聆正确的聆听和唱诵这些讯息，这些讯息本身便是虔诚活动。
Vishwanath says the first of these two verses is discussing the previous chapter or Anartha Nivritti. And the next verse is presenting Nishtha. What is Nishtha? Nishtha means a stage of faith that is steady. Try to remember back to our first day, second day. The very first beginning of receiving bhakti in your heart. It manifests as shraddha or faith. In this book, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, actually all nine stages can be described as stages of faith. Just like the question I asked you about a tulsi seed, a little sprout, and one that has many leaves, and one that gives manjaris, they're all tulsi. Remember that example. Similarly, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says faith and faith and faith and faith and nine stages of faith, just given different names. And this is one of the names. It's where faith becomes steady. Or fixed. In Sanskrit, there's this word, naishchalyam. Naishchalyam, as you see, it means no movement. Steady. Fixed. Prior to that, there's unsteady and not fixed. That's us. You know what it looks like. It's a sine curve, those of you that know geometry. Geometry. I don't know what it is in Chinese. The science as a math. Sometimes we're doing. It's just like chanting japa. We call it in japa retreats hills and valleys. Sometimes your chanting is going very nicely and it's really sublime, and then something happens and it goes down, down, down. It just keeps going down and down. And down. And then Krishna intervenes and suddenly it starts going up again. That's unsteady.
种状态就是不稳定的一种状态。
There's good news. There's a stage called steady.
那么到了那一个好消息，还有稳定的阶段。
Here's what the graph looks like.
那么它就像是这个
graph. The chart.
就像是这个就像是这个表，这个波浪线。
The highs and the lows, or the hills and the valleys, become more steady.
然后逐渐逐渐的这个山啊，就是一开始的时候有山有山谷有山，然后逐渐的这个起伏不是那么差异那么大了。
And the whole graph starts to slope up, 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 up.
然后就像是这个爬坡一样，这个坡逐渐逐渐的逐渐的高起来，往上爬。
That's a nice graph.
那么这就是这个爬坡。
That's where we want to go.
这就是我们想要去的。
We want to go beyond that, but that's where we're headed next.
那么这就是这个，就是进到这个山，就是爬坡的这个阶段的时候，我们想要爬上去。
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in this book.
那么 Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur 在这本书中写道。
That does not happen as long as there's impurities in the heart.So to become steady, we have to work very hard at the eradication of impurities of the heart. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur analyzes these impurities.He calls them obstacles or faults.
那么他说到了，这就是这个障碍。
And they're all specific to where our attention goes while we're chanting japa or attending the Bhagavatam class.
那么他就说到了，当无论我们在念诵或者是聆听圣典国家瓦坛的讲课。
Or you go to your room and you read a book.
或者是你去到你的房间去读书。
So.It's from lower, or from grosser, to gradually more and more subtle. There are five items.
那么实际上它一共有五种类型，逐渐是从粗糙的到精微的形式。
The first one is sleeping.
那么一开始的这个有一种现象就是瞌睡。
And it's sometimes even I've seen this in kirtan. People sometimes sleep in kirtan.
我曾经见过，甚至人们就是出现者在kirtan的时候，他们都打瞌睡了。
There's one devotee I know, I won't say his name, but it was known that from time to time, even when giving the Bhagavatam class, he would fall asleep. What to speak of the people in the audience? While speaking, he would fall asleep.And it wasn't with the translator either. Then it might be a little more subtle for a person in the audience to fall asleep. And then a little more subtle, maybe when you're chanting japa, you might get a little drowsy and fall asleep.So this is something that's a fault that needs to be overcome. But now let's supposing you're staying awake during all these activities. Your mind may be distracted by something other than the kirtan or the class or your japa.Supposing one can get overcome that distraction a little bit.
Then
this next fault is just being indifferent, a little complacent.
A
pratipatti is the term.
This is called a pratipatti.
then another is maintaining bad habits.
还有一种现象就是仍然保持着那些不良的习性。
Just the tendency to flare up and become angry.
那么例如一个人他很容易愤怒，生性愤怒。
That's a sign of unnishtita bhakti or unsteady devotion.
那么这就是如果一个人还是这样的话，那就被称为是一种不稳定的一种状态。
Or greed, one is contemplating get money, get money.Or get appreciation from others, get recognition from others. Think like that, that's an undesirable impurity of the heart. And this is a very subtle and pervasive attraction for material enjoyment in general.So that even when sitting in a really nice kirtan, it's hard for the mind to be focused. So this is subtle. But it's a science. And Vishwanath, our great acharya, is giving us this science.So next, he discusses there's types of steadiness.
那么下一个部分呢，就讲到了有不同程，有不同类型的稳定。
I'll try to say it very simply.
我现在是以非常深入浅出的一种方式讲。
There's steadiness of bhakti itself.
那么有这个 bhakti 的稳定阶段。
And there's steadiness of symptoms that one expects from one who is situated nicely in devotion to Krishna.
那么有一种稳定呢，是直接来自于 bhakti 奉爱服务的，还有一种稳定呢，是来自于其他的一些，就是比较有助于自己的一种情况。
Basically, there are characteristics of someone in the quality of goodness.His point overall is we may think a person is steady if their characteristics seem to be nice.
那么如果我们一般就是这样想的，如果他的品格非常优秀非常好的话，他一个就是说一个稳定的人，奉献服务比较稳定的人，他的品格应该是非常优秀的。
His point is that's unstable actually, because it's only possible to be steady when bhakti is steady.Some scholars and acharyas, they say steadiness comes first in your activities of your body, then your words, then the mind.
那么有的 acharya 就说到了，首先呢是你的这种行为表现出来比较稳定，接下来你的言语还有你的心意。
Other acharyas say it's not necessarily like that in different people that manifest in a different way.Some devotees really like reading.
那么有的人奉献者，他们的确是非常喜欢阅读书籍。
They're not so attracted to chanting.
但是呢，他们对这个念诵不是那么感兴趣。
Some devotees are really attracted to chanting and not so attracted to reading.
有一些奉献者非常喜欢念诵，但是不那么喜欢阅读书籍。
Some aren't attracted to either of them so much, and they just like doing service.And they may be very steady in their service. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's point is, in this little section, is steadiness should be looked at in terms of bhakti itself. Sometimes there are things that are.He calls favorable to bhakti.
那么在这里面呢，有一些品格 有利于发起的。
Someone is very humble.
有些人很谦卑。
Someone is very compassionate.
有些人非常的仁慈。
Someone is always being respectful to others.
有一些人总是非常尊敬其他人。
These are nice characteristics.
这都是一些非常美好的品质。
And they're favorable to bhakti.But they're not the essence of bhakti.
但是呢，里面却缺少了 bhakti.
So real steadiness comes, his point is, from bhakti itself.
那么实际上真正的稳定是来自于 bhakti 本身的。
And this is our last slide.
这是我们的这个章节的最后一个幻灯片。
The characteristics of nishtha are.
那么这个 nishtha 稳定的其他的这个特征
the carrying with you a spiritual conception of I and mine all the time
那么它就会灵性化我们我和我的这种概念
the lower modes of nature may be present but they cannot act
可能这个比较低等的这些属性形态依然存在但是它们不受这些形态的影响
I'll expand on this point a little bit.
我现在来花一点时间讲述这一点。
Nishtha means steady.
Nishtha 的意思是稳定。
In this nishtha stage, there are some impurities remaining.
那么在稳定的阶段呢，内心仍然还有一些不洁。
The Srimad Bhagavatam verses that Surabhi read said, "Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu," which means that.The abhadras, the unwanted things, are almost destroyed to nil.
那么在这里面呢，圣简伯家瓦坛第一天第二章第十八世界里面说到了，那些心中的不洁几乎被清除掉。
It means they're still there.
那意思是这些不洁还有。
But bhakti is so strong.
但是呢 ，bhakti 是如此的有力量。
They can't act.
它能够把这些清除。
Similarly, the modes of, lower modes of nature may be still present to some degree.
可能呢，这种低等的形态仍然在内心存在。
But when
这种程度不一样。
When steady bhakti is so strong.
当这个稳定的 bhakti 它是如此的有力量，越来越强烈的时候。
They can't appear.
它们就会消除。
It's like when light is there, darkness isn't going to be there.And as far as meditation upon Krishna is concerned,
那么就像是冥想 Krishna,
it's strong.
当一个人强烈的、非常的集中的去冥想 Krishna, 专注的冥想 Krishna.
Meditation on other topics than Krishna may appear from time to time, but not so much.
那么可能就是去想着有 Krishna 以外的东西，他也许会有偶尔会想到 Krishna 以外的东西。
But as far as material attachments are concerned,
在这里谈到了关于物质的依附
they're still prominent.
那么这种物质的依附呢，仍然很突出，很明显。
And that's the end of the chapter.
这就是这一章节的结束。
So, how can we determine if someone is on the nishtha platform?
那么我们如何能够判定一个人是否完全的处在稳定阶段呢？
Look to see.How their hearing and chanting activities are going on.
那么我们就得去看一看他是否非常的努力的聆听和唱诵。
Over a period of time.
要是是否就是长期的能够这么做的。
Not just
努力的聆听和唱诵。
Not just at gatherings like this when we're all, you know, very fired up and enthusiastic.
不仅仅就是说大家奉献者一起聚会的时候非常热情洋溢的唱诵聆听。
But if our hearing and chanting activities are steady day after day after day,
而且还要看看他们是不是日复一日的坚持不懈的努力的专注的聆听唱诵。
And there's a strong striving or endeavor to bring our attention to the holy name.
而且呢，是不是要看到他们是不是非常非常的努力、坚持不懈的专注的唱诵聆听
？And make our offerings.Of voga to the deity with genuine devotion.
而且他们是不是就是非常真诚的去服务神像
？It has to do with effort, in other words.
也就是说，他们
Then the anarcha-nivritti stage progresses quickly. And one quickly approaches the platform of nishtha. And so here's a little summary point. This is how he concludes the chapter. If one wants to pass quickly into the stage of steadiness, effort applied in our devotional practices must be very strong and steady and consistent. In general, the hearing and chanting activities, because they're the foundation of our devotional life. Should be done regularly and strongly. Making that effort will help us reach the stage of nishtha. And there are the symptoms of one who has attained the stage of nishtha. This is very immediately relevant for all of us. I'll say the same thing in a different way. This is Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur describing. There are 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy name. And the root of all of the 10 offenses is inattentiveness. Where does your attention go when you're chanting? Not just chanting, but where does your attention go when you're chanting? Offenseless chanting is gauged by the attentiveness going to the name. And we have all these distractions going on. We all know it very well. How strong is the effort that you're making to become attentive instead of distracted? To the degree that you're striving to be attentive, you'll overcome the offenses. All of them. And then reach this stage of steadiness. It's the root of all offenses against the holy name, being inattentive while chanting. So what's the cure? Strive to be attentive. And continue like that consistently, very carefully, very attentively. There's the root of coming to an advanced stage in chanting of the holy name. Should I say it again? There's the root, the root cause of coming to the stage of advancement in chanting and advancement in devotional service.
Mm-hmm.
we're done. She's getting exhausted. Anyway, so, Hare Krishna. Any, we did this much quicker than yesterday. And the rest of the chapters are going to go even more quickly. Because they're very advanced stages and we don't have any experience of them. We have experience of struggling. But when there isn't a struggle, what's that like? We're going to hear that one. Tomorrow. So any questions on what we've covered so far? Gopi Priya's got her hand up. Gopi Priya, yes? Huh? Translate. Capture the question correctly? I'm not sure what you're asking. The essential freedom from that comes from bhakti is the enjoying separately from Krishna spirit. With bhakti, we get freedom from trying to be the separate enjoyer. Specific to past pious activities, it's not the fruits of the pious activities themselves that's the problem. It's trying to be the enjoyer of those fruits. One of Prabhupada's disciples is the grandson of Henry Ford, a very, you know, fabulously wealthy and famous person.
Mm-hmm.
just by being born in that family, his son, grandson, Alfred Ford, now Ambarish, had enormous wealth. But anyone that has associated with him knows he's such an amazingly humble person. And he's been, by Prabhupada's mercy of giving him bhakti, thinking how to use that nicely in Krishna's service. So bhakti has saved him from the anartha of being the enjoyer of past pious activity. Does that answer your question? No. Okay.
Complete and absolute.
Okay.
Like that.
Yeah.
And in the chart, you mentioned about it comes from three thoughts. Comes from the thing.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Activity comes from the nama parada and okay. comes from the bhakti. But didn't mention the part of highest, the anatta comes from highest activity. Therefore, I'm asking that for the highest, for the anatta comes from highest activity. What's the grade of the nullification of anartha?
Okay.
Is it similar to that?
Yes.
Come from bhakti or
no? It's similar to anarthas that come from past sin.
Okay.
Hi, Krishna.
的这种不洁它实际马哈拉吉他回答的是来自于虔诚活动的这种不洁跟来自于罪恶活动的不洁的这个清除的程度是一就是这种过程是一样的。The
basis of my giving the answer is the following.
那么我给大家的这个就是列举那个表格给予大家的这种概念实际上是这样的。Vishwanath
states, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that some authorities combine impurities that arise from pious activities in the same group as impurities that arise from past sins. Yes.
There are nine stages of bhakti.
Nine stages of bhakti.
Yes. And Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, countless times, that as long as you are rendering service to me, you are under my protection.
Yes.
And he promised to Arjuna, and he instructed Arjuna always to protect. Service under my protection. So I wonder, at what stage among the nine stages will we be protected from fully? Krishna 也无数次地告诉 Arjuna 说，在我的保护下行事。如果你对我做奉爱服务，你就处在我的保护之中。那么我想，在九个奉爱服务的阶段当中，在哪个阶段 Krishna
Let me make sure I've understood your question. Correctly. You want to know at what stage can one be assured of not falling? That's your question?
Okay.
I'll answer your question, then I'll go back and restate something that you said. Edit a little bit what you said. When one has come to the stage of offenseless chanting, one is guaranteed of not falling. The likelihood prior to that is very small. The likelihood of falling at a lesser stage is very slender, very slim, but it's possible. Did you attend the class this morning? And you heard Maharaj describing Bharat, the king who attained the bhava stage just before prema bhakti. Remember? That's very unusual. Because of his very advanced spiritual attainment, Krishna arranged that in his next life he would not forget Krishna. That spiritual attainment stayed with him, even he made a big mistake. But nonetheless, he fell. He stopped his spiritual practices. As a king, he stopped. Our commentary explains, knowingly, he stops. Because he allowed himself to become attached. So attached, he just stopped his practices. That was a fault. And he was held responsible for that fault. But his remembrance of Krishna was preserved in his next life and in the next life. It's a very unique situation. Normally one doesn't come to that stage and then stop practicing. So I'm qualifying my answer. I'm qualifying my response to your question. Very unusual. But still possible. So you saw those charts. And particularly with reference to Nam Aparad, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, our great Acharya, says that one has to come to the full shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna.
Krishna.
at that stage there's not even a possibility anymore. So that's an answer to your question. Now I'm going to go back and edit something that you said. Krishna makes his promise. My devotee will never be vanquished. He will give his protection. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are a number of places where Prabhupada adds some qualifying statements. Proportionate to one's surrender unto Krishna, Krishna extends his protection. Here's a simple way that Prabhupada said the same thing. If you give yourself to Krishna 10%, he'll give himself to you that much. Thirty percent, you give to Krishna, he'll give you himself 30%. So it's 100%. You give yourself to Krishna, you submit yourself to Krishna, Krishna gives himself 100% to you. And here's another detail. Sometimes we're more surrendered and sometimes we're less surrendered. Intermittently, we surrender and withdraw our surrender and get distracted. And Krishna doesn't interfere with our free will. He reciprocates with our free will. And that's something internal. It's very personal. You can fool other people, but you can't fool Krishna, what's in your heart. That's what Krishna is looking for. Not just what you're giving to Krishna, but what you're holding back. Krishna is looking to see not just what you have in your hand, but what you're holding back. He wants your heart. And when you give your heart to Krishna, he gives himself completely to such a devotee. That's where there's no falling down.
Right?
Okay. Yes. Microphone.
So much in our life, we undergo a lot of suffering, struggle, and experience of feelings. So how can we recognize those feelings come from our karma or come from Krishna's mercy? Is any difference between both of them?
Big difference. It's the difference between day and night. At night we dream.
但晚上我们做梦。
And happiness and distress may happen in our dream.
那可能在我们做梦的时候，我们还会体验到快乐和痛苦。
We may dream we're king or queen seated on a throne and enjoying royal life.
可能我梦见自己像皇后、国王一样坐在王座上，享受着天庭活动。
And then into the palace comes a tiger and starts chasing us, and then we're fearful and cry.
然后忽然间一只老虎跑到皇宫里来了，然后追着我们到处跑，我们就开始在那里哭喊着。
And then crying, we wake up and realize there wasn't a throne and there wasn't a tiger.
然后呢，当你从这种哭喊当中惊醒过来的时候，既没有老虎，也没有那种这个皇宫的那个情况。
That's happiness and distress at night.And daytime, it's just the opposite. We're thinking this is happiness and that's in distress. But both are forgetful of our real happiness. And our real happinessis with Krishna. Remember that nice illustration I was making the other day? And what's real, the standard of distress is forgetting Krishna. And once I forget Krishna, whether it's so-called happiness or so-called distress, it's distress.Because my real happiness is gone. It's like a child. A child gets a toy. And they're very happy. And then the toy breaks. And then they're very unhappy. We're like children.There's no happiness in having the toy, or even when it breaks, that it's no unhappiness. It's all illusion. So now back to your question. The distress that we're feeling in our minds, it's illusory.When the soul becomes attached to that which is temporary, one experiences distress. Here's Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. Yehi samsparsha jab bhoga dukha yonaya evate. And that means,As long as one is seeking happiness through senses contacting sense objects, oh, I'm going to get some happiness, in that very expectation, that's the birthplace of distress. When we have the thing, we call that happiness. But it's actually distress. Because our attention has gone from Krishna. When our attention goes to Krishna, that's happiness. And this world of duality just fades into insignificance. Sometimes an example is given of a firefly at night. In China, you have fireflies?
在中国大家看到萤火虫了没有
So what does a firefly look like during the daytime? Insignificant. Because in the light of the sun, what's the light of the firefly? But when the sun sets, the firefly zooming around, oh, look at that. But it's actually insignificant. In absolute reality, it's absolutely insignificant, the happiness and distress of material existence. It has no more meaning than the happiness and distress in a dream. So that answers your question. Can you hear over there? Okay. Can I see the microphone? Go ahead. Translate.
I would like to confirm, and she understands your explanation in this way. So, when we experience such, when we have such a feeling, we feel that such things depend, comes from the mercy of Lord Krishna, or just comes from the karma. The difference is between depends on our.
Yes. The mercy of Krishna
depends on our, if we are in Krishna consciousness or not.
Yes. When you are situated in devotion to Krishna, that's the internal potency. That's the internal potency. And when you're not engaged in devotional service, the distress one feels is through the agency of the external potency. That answers your question. Yes? All right. So be engaged in Krishna's devotional service. Like the gopis are engaged in Krishna's devotional service. And sometimes they feel unhappy. Because Krishna went to Mathura. And so they cried. Feeling separation from Krishna. The residents of Vrindavan are so attached to Krishna that even a moment seems like 10 years or more. The cowherd boys are walking through the forest. And they're with Krishna. Krishna passes on the other side of a tree. And for that moment they can't see Krishna. And they feel great separation from Krishna till he passes on the other side of the tree. There's happiness and there's distress in the spiritual world, but it's fully transcendental. Here is just a reflection of that. That feeling of separation is another ecstasy. The feelings between a lover and beloved in this world. And the beloved has gone away for some time, and oh, woo, woo, woo. You know, they have songs like that. I don't think I can sing one of them. That's just a reflection, though, of the feelings of the gopis or the feelings of the cowherd boys. There's such a beautiful description of the feelings of love of Mother Jasoda for Krishna. It's found in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. When Mother Jasoda in the morning gets Krishna ready to go out and herd the cows, it's a festival every morning. But she has such motherly affection for Krishna, she doesn't want him to go. And he tells his mother, it's time to go, Mother Jasoda, I have to go now. So she adjusts his jewelry and his garland, said, okay, you can go. And he takes a few steps and she comes running after him and she wants to adjust his belt. And Krishna smiles. He says, Mother Jasoda, I have to go now. So he takes a few steps. And she comes running after him with some extra samosas. That's prasadam, by the way. And says, Balaram, you put this in your lunch bag and make sure that Krishna has enough to eat. And Krishna smiles. He says, Mother Jasoda, I have to go now. I really have to go now. And he takes a few steps. And this goes on, and finally Krishna puts his foot down, I have to go, and he goes, and Mother Jasoda is standing there watching like a statue as Krishna and the cowherd boys enter into the forest of Vrindavan. And she stands there watching until she can only see the dust raised in the sky from the hooves of the cows as they're going into the forest. And she's like in a trance, and Nanda Maharaj has to grab her by the arm and say, Yasoda, we have to go back to the house now. And her thoughts are absorbed in Krishna all day long. She's feeling such love and separation from Krishna. It's so beautiful. So beautiful. There's feelings of unhappiness, but it's transcendental. This intensified feelings of love for Krishna, that's all. There's so many more nice things like that to describe, but you get the picture. I'll share this other little section. It's very nice. When Gopakumar first arrives in Goloka Vrindavan, he doesn't know where he is. And he walks around and asking people, what is this place? And who's in charge here? And nobody will talk with him. And he wonders, are these people rude? Or have I offended them in some way? But no one will talk with him. Finally, one old lady walking along very slowly responds. And her response is very short. She says, this is Goloka. And the place, the person in charge is Krishna. And the reason that no one will talk to you is they're feeling such pain of separation, they can't even speak. But just now, look in that direction. Do you see all the people of Vrindavan running in that direction? That's because Krishna is going to come very soon from the trees in the forest of Vrindavan, and everyone is running to greet him. They're not just walking, they're running. So Gopakumar starts running also. And he sees the dust in the distance as the cows are approaching. And Krishna sounds his buffalo horn. And that's the sign to tell all the residents of Braja, Krishna's coming back at the end of the day. Gopakumar has been meditating on his mantra for a long time, and finally he sees the object of his mantra, Krishna himself. So he calls out very loudly, Madan Gopal! Madan Gopal! And he's running and running. And Krishna sees him come running towards him, and Krishna starts running towards Gopakumar. And Gopakumar sees Krishna's running, so he runs faster, and Krishna runs faster, and they're approaching one another, and they both faint on the ground in ecstasy.
And
Nobody knows who this Gopa Kumar is. They've never seen him before. Gopa Kumar comes to his external consciousness first. And Balaram, his brother, Krishna's brother, comes over and scolds Gopa Kumar. Look, just see what you've done. You're the cause of Krishna falling onto the ground unconscious. Shame on you. And then Krishna comes to external consciousness. And Krishna stands up and sees Gopa Kumar. And immediately he embraces Gopa Kumar to his chest very strongly. And then he holds him at full arm's length and speaks to him. And he says, "At last you've come. I was hoping for so long that you would come. I thought maybe in this lifetime he'll come, but you didn't come. And then in the next lifetime, I thought maybe this lifetime he'll come, but you didn't come. And it happened again and again, and finally I came myself and I became your spiritual master and I gave you the Manda and Gopal mantra and finally you've come. So please never go away again. Gopa Kumar is crying and crying and crying. I'll never go away again. I'll never go away again. So now you come with me. I'm going home now and I want to make sure that you get very nice prasadam. And there's a whole scene that happens at Nanda Maharaja's palace, giving a special seat at the house of Nanda Maharaj, and he's feeding him the same prasadam that he gets. So our real unhappiness is forgetting Krishna. But when there's connection with Krishna or devotion to Krishna, there's a transcendental kind of emotion. Sometimes it looks like happiness, sometimes it looks like sadness. In all cases, it's ecstasy of love of God. It's a long answer to your question. Someone else? Yes.
就是灵感，也会灵感出来。我不知道这种是 是 Krishna 给我的那个指引，还是说，是我在念诵的时候我分清了，然后对这个念诵是一种冒犯。那如果是一种冒犯的话，那我应该如何避免这种冒犯？我请Guru Pada回答。
你说的这种敏感是说在那个问题的解决是吧？
对对对对对。
好的 ，Please in your lecture you mentioned such offenses that during japa distraction.
Yeah.
From the yep. Yep. So, for example, when I meet some problems and maybe at that time my mind is not very clear how to deal with such problems. So, after several days, when I chant the holy name, and suddenly inspiration comes from my mind for such a problem, how to solve such a problem. So at that time, is a kind of distraction or is a Krishna's guidance or direction? So how, if this is offensive, how to avoid?
First, let me explain how Super Soul works. This is Prabhupada's example. A cat is in the kitchen. And there's some milk on the table. The cat waits till the housewife leaves the kitchen. And the cat jumps up on the table and gets the milk and drinks the milk. The inspiration to wait and then go, that's Super Soul. Here's another example. A thief. It's the dark of night. And he's sneaking around in the shadows at night. And a little voice inside says, uh-oh, someone is coming. So he hides behind a tree. And the person passes. And the little voice inside says, now is time, you can go. That's Super Soul, etc. So what you described is also Super Soul. Now whether one is a cat or a thief or a problemed young man, where should our attention go? Our attention should go to Krishna. If Krishna is very kind and gives some solution or some inspiration to a situation, that's up to him. He's in our heart. He knows we're troubled. And in his terms, in his own way, he could give us some indication what to do. So, here's some choices. I can have faith in that Krishna will take care of me, he's my protector. And just hold on to Krishna's hand. And feel safe and protected by Krishna. Or I can be in anxiety and not be able to pay attention to the holy name and ponder over and over again 100,000 times about what's the solution to the problem.
然后或者是另一个选择，就是我们在那里想啊想，想了千百万次，然后完全不注意这一个手中 Krishna， 不去关注它。
Obviously, the first one is better.
我想第一个选择是最好的。
So, in either case, Krishna may give a solution to the problem.More likely, I'll be able to hear the solution to the problem if I'm being attentive to Krishna than I'm just worrying about the solution. I haven't answered your question yet.But I'm describing the circumstance. So best that your attention goes to Krishna. And rely on Krishna for giving you indication what to do. And when Krishna gives some indication, one will be thinking, Krishna is very kind.Your attention stays on Krishna. Not the solution and how I'm going to apply the solution. Your attention should stay with Krishna. So now the answer to your question is it depends on whether your attention stays with Krishna or goes simply to the solution.Because you have a relationship with Krishna. And if you're attentive to the relationship with Krishna, that's one thing. Part of the relationship is Krishna is giving you a solution. The cat or the thief aren't thinking of Krishna. But a devotee is thinking of Krishna. And here comes something from Krishna to me.
And
my thought stays with Krishna. A devotee's thought stays with Krishna.Did that help?
So, Sandini Mama asked that if such inspiration appears in the mind during japa, so in such circumstances, it is kind of destruction?
Depends.
And
I could have a thought that appears in my mind during japa that says, go rob a bank. Go rob a bank. Go steal money from a bank. It depends.Pay attention to Krishna is my point. We have a very strong fruitive tendency. When we receive some instruction, so supposing we have a problem. I mean, we hardly ever have a problem, but just imagine that you have a problem.And you go to Krishna or Krishna's devotee. And you say, oh, I've got a problem.
然后告诉他们说,
And they give you a perfect solution to the problem.
然后呢，他们就给出你这个解决问题的非常完美的一个解决方法。
Imagine a perfect solution to the problem.
我只是在想着一个非常完美的解决方法。
Fruitive tendency goes like this.
那么实际上这种全神贯注100%的这种注意。
Great, here's something I got to do, and we go and run and do it, and forget the person, forget the connection with Krishna.We go in the doership mode and start doing something because that's our tendency. Very fruitive. We lose track of our Krishna consciousness that way. Gopi Priya, you want to translate that one? Okay. I'll do it again. She'll do the translating.I have a problem. And I go to somebody, a nice devotee, or I pray to Krishna. And the nice devotee makes a very practical suggestion to address the problem. Or Krishna within my heart gives some inspiration.Now, being a fruitive person, I forget all about the devotee, forget all about Krishna, I just go right away with the solution and start working out on the solution. I forgot Krishna.And I forgot the devotees who are representing Krishna. And I just got into my fruitive mode. And that goes on all the time. So, my point is, it's not just when something comes as an inspiration, is it, you know, from Krishna and then for us and in the internal...It's how we respond to that. It's exactly the point that Maharaj was making in the Bhagavatam class this morning about dust from the feet of a devotee. Same point.I'm just expressing it in a different way. You get some mercy. Now what are you going to do with that mercy? Enjoy it. I've got a solution to my problem. See you later, Krishna. In fact, we don't even have the courtesy to say, see you later, Krishna. We just take off. I got what I wanted. That's what's important, getting what I want. That's fruitive mentality. That's the mode of passion. And we're very prone to the mode of passion. That's what this earthly planet is made up of.And one who is influenced by such mode of passion takes birth in this place again. Is there an alternative? I'm suggesting an alternative.When the devotee, just like Dhruva receives from Narada Muni some instruction how he can get a kingdom. He had a problem. He wanted a solution to his problem. Nara gave him the solution to the problem. Dhruva didn't forget Narada. Dhruva felt enormous gratitude. And that gratitude grew and grew and grew, and it displaced the desire for the kingdom, and it became pure devotional service. This, I have a lot to say about this point. It's really important. I'll give another example from Scripture. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2. Shukadeva Goswami is asked by Maharaj Pariksit some questions about creation. It's at the beginning of chapter 4 of Canto 2. It's beautiful how Shukadeva Goswami answers. Because he's Shukadeva Goswami, his thoughts go to the personality of Godhead Krishna. And he glorifies Krishna, and he glorifies Krishna, and he glorifies Krishna, and within that glorification of Krishna is the answer. It's very instructive. I see so many times devotees get an answer to the question that they want. They feel very happy. Oh, now I have a nice solution. For a few days or a few weeks or a little period, a few months, they do that nicely, and then it goes, It happens again and again. And they go, why does that happen? Because of your fruitive tendency. You forgot Krishna, forgot the person who you got the advice from. You just started going down the path of fruitive activity and you weren't acting in devotion. My answer to your question is, it depends on how you regard that inspiration that comes from Krishna while you're chanting japa. Or how you regard the dust from the feet of an exalted devotee. What's the mood of service? That's what's important. Krishna is giving me an opportunity to serve him, to come closer to him. So, the response should be, Krishna is very kind, let me act in my relationship with Krishna according to that which I've received from him. There can be a Krishna conscious response, or there can be a fruitive response. and we have to learn that upward path, not the sine curve path. I hope you get the message. Is it clear? It's a very important lesson in life to learn to become steady in Krishna consciousness. You want to add anything to this? You're okay? Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Just accept it on the authority of Scripture for now. Our great Acharya Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is explaining to us. He's up here. We're down here. And he's letting us know, as long as you're sincerely striving to stay favorably engaged in Krishna's service, you're under the care of Srimati Radharani and the internal potency. No, you may not understand that in detail how it works. But it's a fact of descending knowledge. And as you become a little more purified it'll all become more clear.
到净化之后，这一切都会逐渐逐渐的明朗。
And it'll feel good even when there's a difficulty.
即便是你处在困境当中的时候，你仍然会感觉到这种内心的这种
Because Krishna's mercy will be coming into your life and you'll feel that mercy. So for now, just accept on scriptural authority and the authority of our great acharyas, you're within the internal potency, Krishna is helping you directly. Krishna is directly engaged in your life. Ananyas chintayam tamam yejana paryupasate tesham nityavyuktanam yoga kshema vaham yaham. You can look up that verse in Bhagavad Gita later. Krishna says the same thing. Directly. I personally am engaged in the lives of my devotees. We're down here. We don't have that realization. Continue the process of devotional service with that understanding, and gradually it will become more clear and more clear and more clear. Everything will become clear. Second question.
The second question is that he said that our mind is like a wild horse. So how to control?
Yes. Okay.
So how to control the mind?
Lord Chaitanya's teachings about the holy name. The mind becomes cleansed through the chanting of the holy name. That's one. Just listen. Don't give the problem. I'm giving you the solution. Second thing. The mind is like a wild horse. What does Krishna say? Arjun says what you say. He uses a different metaphor. He says, the mind is more difficult to control than the raging wind. You know what Krishna says? He says, you're right. But it's possible to control the mind by constant practice and detachment. And detachment from the mind means attachment to Krishna. So practice becoming attached to Krishna. And again and again, bring the mind back whenever it wanders to Krishna. How many times? As many times as the mind goes, that many times. The word in Sanskrit is abhyasa, practice. Now here's number three.
Bhakti Siddhanta.
He gave an explanation how to control the mind.
他给了我们一个解释，如何去控制心意。
And he gave two options.
他做了两个选择。
Neglect.
要么就是忽视他。
And stick.
或者是打他。
Stick. Beat the mind.
棍用棍子。
Beat the mind.
就是用棍子打心意。
Because I spoke about this at length at a Japa retreat.
因为我刚才提到了，就是刚才在Japa进修当中说到的。
And Gopi Priya recently heard the whole recording.
然后 Gopi Priya 呢，最近听到了整个这个Japa进修的这个。
So you ask her, and she'll give you the explanation.
所以呢，你现在在课后呢，你去问 Gopi Priya， 他会给你一个完整的答案。
But the principle is neglect.The mind is going, hey, look at me, look at me. I got something going on over here.
那么主要的原则就是不理睬心意，心意总是这样，哎，看我吧，看我吧，我干得多好。
And you just neglect that.
所以呢，我们就是只是忽视它，或者是不理睬心意。
And the mind may get louder and shout. Just keep neglecting the mind.
那么那个时候，如果心意它叫唤的越来越欢，越来越大的话，我们。
And place the mind on Krishna.She'll give you the example.
那么我们给他有一个例子。
And then a stick.
还有就是这是一个例子，这是一种方式，还有就是棍子。
Bhaktisiddhanta said.
Bhaktisiddhanta 说的。
At night, before you go to bed, beat your mind 100 times with a broomstick.
那么 Bhaktisiddhanta 他是这样说的，在晚上上床睡觉之前，拿着这个哨子敲你的心意一百下。
And when you get up in the morning.Beat your mind 100 times with a shoe.
那么你就拿你的鞋敲你的心意一百下。
No, not your head.
要你敲你的头，敲你头。
Your mind.
你的心意。
Okay, you got it?
不是你的头，不是你的头，不是敲你的头。敲你的心意。
You gave the problem. You gave the problem. There's the solution.There's three solutions. Take any one of them. And don't complain. Here's how the complaint begins. Yeah, but the mind is so difficult. Wow, wow, wow. follow the indication of Krishna and our great acharyas.And you'll have a path to control the wild horse.
然后你要去追，就是跟随那个 Krishna 所给出的指引，还有先前 Acharya 他所给出的这种指引和指导，我们也应该去按照如何去控制像野马一样的心意的这个方式去做。
Anyone else?
还有其他人
吗？
Yes. 我想问一下，就是心意跟。就是我怎么才能判断我的行为还有我对事物的认识是由心意决定的还是由我的自由意识
？I would like to know what the difference between the mind and the free will. Because how to judge that my decision comes from my mind or just depends on the free will.
Which depends on mind or free will?
你说的这种决定是吧？
就是我对这个事物的判断呀，还有我的这个行为方式，到底是我是怎么能够去判断是由我的心意决定的，还是由我的自由意志决定
？I would like to know how to judge that my judgment or behavior according to the decision of mind or our free will, my free will.
Do you understand the question?
就是你说的，你这个行为举止是由你的心意。
我就说心意跟自由意志有什么区别？
If she wants to know what's the difference between mind and free will, that's I can address that. I can say lots of things. That's what she wants? Oh, okay. Okay.
那你刚才问到的就是心意和自由意志。
For example,
if I do something, so when I want to do this
concentration is the word you're using?
No.
What's the word?
Decision.
Realization?
Decision. Decision. Yeah. For example, he wants to do something, and such a decision of doing such things comes from mind or
okay.
free will.
Okay. Generally, it's the mind. Are you a conditioned soul or a liberated soul? Okay, so then it's coming from your mind. But that's okay, devotees use their mind too. That's okay. Free will, so mind is has different functions. Accepting, rejecting. Accepting, rejecting. Sankalpa, vikalpa. That's the mind. Vacillating back and forth. Many of our decisions, accepting, even Krishna consciousness, you heard me say the other day, maybe, I have the opinion that many people join the Hare Krishna movement with their mind. And so, it's very unsteady. Thinking, feeling, and willing, these are also functions of the mind. Thinking, feeling, and willing. That's the mind. And then we do something. You use the word making a decision about something. That's the mind. We deliberate within the mind. Towards the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, one who studies this sacred conversation is worshipping me with their intelligence. If we do what Krishna wants according to his teachings in Bhagavad Gita, then we're acting on the platform of intelligence. And now let's go to the platform of the soul. Wouldn't that be nice? That's where free will resides. It's the operative place, or the place of where it goes this way or that way, is the soul. Proper use of the free will is to say yes to Krishna. We just need to know what Krishna wants, and the answer is yes. That's free will. So largely, when we're making decisions to do something, it's the mind. So what we want to do as devotees is align the mind and the intelligence and the free will. Why do we study scripture? why are we having this whole seminar, this whole national holiday? Why are we doing this? Why have I come all the way from America and Maharaj all the way from wherever he's come from to spend time with you for 7 days, morning till night, looking at what scripture says? Why are we doing this? We want to worship Krishna with our intelligence. We want to know what Krishna wants. And then with our free will say yes. Then it's really easy to make decisions. Because the mind is aligned with the intelligence, is aligned with the free will, which is aligned with what Krishna wants. Now let's take a practical example. Tomorrow morning you're sitting in your room or wherever you do your japa, and you're sitting chanting your japa. And the mind is going here and there. Now what are you going to do? As Krishna says, there's the free will, there's the intelligence, and there's the mind. You have that opportunity. Very practical. And then the rest of your day, same thing. All these things that we've been speaking about, sadhu ninda or offending a devotee, and all the other things. How we conduct our lives where there's alignment between Krishna's will, our free will, the intelligence in the mind and the senses. I have a lot of faith in the value that will come for the devotees that are taking part in this function to bring their intelligence to Krishna's instructions so they know how to live their lives properly. Systematically study Prabhupada's books under the guidance of persons who are qualified to teach, and your Krishna consciousness will go up and the whole yatra will go up. Along with proper chanting of the holy name. So we're spending so much time speaking about how to properly chant the holy name. And then we have to apply ourselves. Apply. We have 5 minutes left before lunch. One more question. Yes, Rajendra.
From the PPT. If a devotee day after day continuously listening and chant the holy name,
他很快就会超越这个安南坦瑞提。He
will quickly go through the stage of anarchan riti.
达到这个稳定的阶段。
And quickly reach on the stage of omniscience.
那这个迅速的英文就是 quickly.
So I see the word English word is quickly.
那昨天那个 Damavati 马大姐问你一个问题。
Yesterday, Damavati asked a question.
他说如何更快地经过这个 anatomy
review? So he asked a question, how to quickly go through anatomy review?
有没有什么方法？
Is any way, any short,
shortcut?
Is any shortcut way?
完了，我没记错的话，你的答案是 no。
But if I remember correct, you give the answer no.
所以我要如果我在传教的时候有人问这个问题，我是答 quickly 还是说 no 好？
Yes, during the preaching, yeah, if I go outside to preach, so some people ask me the same question, so my answer is quickly go through or no. There is no such a shortcut.
Okay. Shortcut and quickly are different.
那么这个捷径和迅速的是两回事，是不一样的。
We can go quickly to take prasadam.
我们可以迅速的去荣耀菩萨。
Or we can break a hole through the wall and make a shortcut.
或者是我们破墙而入，这样的一个捷径去荣耀菩萨。
My understanding of quickly has to do with, in contrast with the yoga ladder where things are, it takes many, many, many lifetimes to get to the stage even when one can begin devotional service.
那么实际上我的理解就是说，这迅速的能够通过 anatomy viti 这个阶段，就是跟按照瑜伽阶梯这个按照这个方式走的话 ，Karma Yoga、Gamma Yoga 啊，那个Dada Yoga and Bhakti Yoga， 如果按照这个捷径去走的话，他会经历生生世世的时间，可能也会很慢的才能够到达 Bhakti Yoga 的层面。
You know the verse from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, out of many thousands among men, hardly one endeavors for perfection.
那么你还记得吧，在博伽梵歌里面有这么一句话，在千千万万的人当中，可能有一人到达完美。
The process of bhakti is direct.
那么 bhakti 奉爱服务的这个方法，它是直接的。
And compared to the indirect method, it's very direct.
那么跟这个间接的方式相比呢，它是非常直接的。
And that sends quickly.
那么这就是听上去就是非常迅速的。
Now here's another sense of quickly, even from those who, amongst those who are chanting.
那么还有另外一种对这个迅速的理解是，即便是在那些念诵的人当中。
In the New York temple, there's a verse that we chant every morning before reciting the 10 offenses.
那么在纽约庙里面，当我们念诵这个一起唱诵圣名十诫的时之前，我们会引述一个诗节。
Bahu janma.Yadi Shravana Kirtana, if one can chant the holy name for Bahu Janma, many, many lifetimes.
那么即便一个人他唱诵圣名无数生生世世，很多生生世世。
And not get the goal of the chanting, the fruit of the chanting, if one commits offenses.
那么如果一个人他做出了冒犯，即便他许许多多生生世世唱诵圣名的话，他依然不能够得到唱诵。
So the quickly, not a shortcut, but quickly is striving very carefully day by day by day to chant with great attention.
那么这个 quick, 这个迅速的意思就是他前面说到要一日复一日，并且是非常努力的，要持续不断的念诵 Krishna名。
Then it's not. Then it's not many, many lifetimes. But quickly. I'll end with the Prabhupada story. Giriraj Maharaj, a disciple of Srila
Prabhupada,
was the president of the Juhu Temple in Bombay.
He was
Prabhupada had the practice at 6 a.m. he would go out for a morning walk.
然后呢, 他每天早上的时候,
so one morning after Mangalarti, so between 5 a.m. and 6 a.m., Giriraj Maharaj was with Prabhupada way up on the top floor.
然后呢,
anyone who has been to the Juhu Temple and knows Prabhupada's quarters can just picture the scene.
那么我们那个时候可以看到朱古庙里面,
not that room?
Not at that time.
Okay, okay, not that room. So wherever he was, they were sitting together.
然后不管怎么样吧,
and Prabhupada was chanting japa, and Giriraj Maharaj was chanting japa together.
那个时候他们两个人都在一起唱诵, 拿着这个japa念诵在一起念诵。
Just the two of them.
就是只有他们两个人在。
And Giriraj Maharaj was feeling how fortunate of sitting here with a pure devotee of the Lord chanting the prime benediction for the this age, the chanting of Krishna's holy name, how fortunate I am. Suddenly Prabhupada stopped chanting. And he pulled his beads out of his bead bag and held them up in the air like this. And he looked at Giriraj Maharaj in a very serious countenance or features of his face. And he said, it took me 30 years to perfect my chanting. And Giriraj Maharaj thought, wow, 30 years? And then he shared this story with us 40 years later and saying, if only if in 30 years I could have perfected my chanting. Overcoming offenses requires sincere effort. So day after day, sincere effort, day after day. That's the quick method. But no shortcut. Effort is required. Okay, Jambavati? Srila Prabhupada ki.